Welcome to Political People, the podcast where we take a peek behind Uncle Sam's polished veneer and explore who politicians are as human beings. We hold the gotcha questions and throw talking points out the window to focus on what makes our public servants unique and inspiring individuals. I'm William Haynes, and this is Political People.
I'm tired of politicians who talk about family values and don't value families.
What a greeting. This is like winning an Oscar, as if I would know.
I'm so old-fashioned that I believe in horsewhip.
Part of the beauty of me is that I'm very rich.
And now, my friends, in a phrase I once addressed to others,
God bless you, and God bless the United States of America.
On this season of Political People, we're focusing on the Big Five, a group comprised of the mayors of Alabama's five largest and most influential cities. Today we talk to Randall Woodfin, the mayor of Birmingham, about the impact his family has had on him, his favorite books, and being a new mayor. Mayor Woodfin has been the mayor since 2017 and ran on the platform of putting people first, a slogan so good that we just might steal it for this podcast.
We really appreciate you joining us today, and we'll jump right in. So tell me a little bit about kind of how you got to where you are today, how your childhood and your past experiences sort of created this trajectory for you to be the mayor of the largest city in Alabama.
So I think part of it is I grew up in a household that were never less than eight people. There were four generations in my home at all times. And part of that is I'm just reflecting on childhood. The whole notion of working with people who are different from you, who think differently, who like different foods and like different tastes, different music, want to watch something different on TV, everything's different. You learn to live with that. You learn to be accepting. You learn to be open. You learn to embrace others, whether their opinion is different or whatever is different. You learn to embrace that. Mm-hmm. And I learned that very, very early. But also learned from my mother and my great-grandmother. My great-grandmother lived with us until she was 100 years of age.
Wow.
She lived with us the last 9 years of her life. Prior to that, I spent summers with her. My mom and my great-grandmother taught me the importance of giving back, helping people, giving back, helping people, giving back, helping people over and over. And the whole idea of whether it was at church, whether it was at school, whether it was in the community, is you represent more than yourself. You represent people. You represent more than people. You represent your family. Do good by others. Do good to others. That was on repeat over and over and over and over. So it stuck with me. It stuck with me in high school. It stuck with me at my first job at age 15 at a grocery store. It stuck with me in college, being a student leader in community service. It just stuck with me.
Tell me a little bit about your great-grandmother and just who she was as a person. And, I mean, what would she think to know that you were the mayor of Birmingham now?
You know, I've thought about this a lot, actually. I reflected on this on Mother's Day because if she was still alive, that's who I would have been spending time with that day along with my mom. My great-grandmother was blind from diabetes, but she still had all of her mental faculties, even at 100. Wow. She was sharp. She grew up in Stonewall, Mississippi, which is outside of Meridian, Mississippi, where they actually use well water. And even in the 90s, when we would, late 80s, when we would visit her, they were still using well water right in front of a train track and the biggest mosquitoes you've ever seen in your life. And I got on her wrong side one time, and it was so bad she slapped the hell out of me. And I've been doing right in life ever since. That's a true story. That's not made up.
Yeah.
But when she moved in with us, being blind from diabetes, she found her way to come outside and sit on the porch. And oftentimes I would sit at the foot of the steps with her on this porch. And she would just give life lesson after life lesson, every valuable lesson you can think of. I got it from her. It was funny because she still had her rotary phone in the late 90s. And she still memorized her phone numbers of her friends,
right,
who were still alive. These friends must have been really younger, like 90s and 80s, early 90s and 80s. But I miss her still.
Yeah.
And I think she would be very proud that I'm representing this city. Hmm. I will tell you this, some of the early childhood memories I have, riding around with her and my granddaddy Cecil, These are the places we went to. Church, Sears, which is the now Innovation Depot, and Church Chicken.
I love it.
And my feet couldn't touch the floorboard. My great grandfather and my grandmother, they great grandmother drove Cadillacs, and I've been loving Cadillacs ever since.
I read something that you had a 10-year-old Cadillac or something. You might have upgraded at this point, but
it's 25 years old now. I have a 1994 Cadillac Concourse.
I love it. Well, fast forwarding a little bit, I want to kind of dig in some to how you operate now as mayor and your personality. So can you tell me a little bit about your management style?
Yeah, I think it's one of setting a vision first. So very high level. I believe I've set that vision. That vision needed to be supported by some core values. And then that leadership style led me to making sure, one, that I'm not the smartest person in the room. So building a team, and at this point, having built a team, putting the best people in place who have various skill sets. And so that included people inside of government already and people with fresh ideas like Bowser, who never participated in government. And he was excited where he was and bringing good folk into municipal government to say, how can we do this better? How can we do this different? And how can we do this that works for people? And then that leads to this. My leadership style is one of over-communicating. So I believe leaders have to be like a broken record and stay on repeat. What's the vision? What's the mission? What are our core values? And always driving that and making sure that's drilled down to your top leadership, all the way down to every employee you have. That's followed up with transparency. And so I drive transparency as far as, I believe as a leader, I should be vulnerable. I shouldn't hide everything or withhold information. So I over-communicate with staff. And then my leadership style is one that I listen more than I talk. So this is probably the most talking I'm doing today. As a matter of fact, my mouth's already hurting because I've been doing this talking for this long, which has only been about 10 minutes. I tend to listen more than I talk as a leader, because I believe in being a sponge and absorbing. And I believe the people around me have the ability that I can learn from them, that leaders, it's not all about us dictating to team members, go do this. This is an issue. I believe there are more solutions than there are problems. I have some ideas around these solutions, but I want your input, I want your feedback, I want your thoughts.
Yeah.
So as a leader, I spend a lot of time listening. I am not one to sit behind a desk. They will tell you my office is crisp, is very clean because I'm never there. I understand that my predecessor, if he was coming to someone's office, they got a heads up. The mayor's on the way. The mayor's on the way. I don't do that. I pop up unannounced. I sometimes like to walk alongside a various leader within a department, whether it's public works, economic development, community development, permits and planning, just to see what the everyday people who are professionals do, what they do, how they do it, and for me to learn, because as mayor, I accept I don't know everything. But if I want everyone to buy into the vision, it's important that I learn, it's important that I over-communicate, and it's important that I continue to share what that vision is.
Mm-hmm. And what does it look like when you're firing on all cylinders?
People want me to slow down. They think I'm on skates and I'm moving too fast. I don't have any brakes. It looks like probably on the low end, 14-hour days. It looks like high energy, a lot of movement, a busy schedule, and a balance of actually governing, where I'm actually leading, and we're around policy and implementation and programmatic and executing on plans and ideas to make municipal government work.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, external, being out in the community and engaging folks at every level around what we're trying to do on their behalf.
Yeah. Which part of that is your preference in terms of sort of the policy, almost academic part of politics and government, or the being in the community, being selling the city, being the face of the community?
Honestly, the first number that comes to mind is 60-40. 60 making government work for the being in the community. You know, if I say a yes to every community request to speak or be there, 100% of my time could be ceremonial, but then I would fail at actually running government. And so as a new mayor, only 17 months in, I haven't even been in office 2 years. I think that 60-40 is very balanced, where I need to make sure the things I inherited that are not functioning at a high level to produce results for the people I represent, basic infrastructure, public works, paving streets, trash, brush, potholes, police, you name it, the basics. I have to get that right. And that's why more time is needed to spend making sure the right people are in place to lead these departments, that they understand the vision, that we have a strategic plan, that we measure what we do, that we overshare what we do, and then take that 40% of that time communicating that to the various stakeholder groups around the community.
Yeah. Would you say that you're an introvert or an extrovert?
I would say I'm an extrovert, and I have introverted tendencies. After a while, I need to recharge. One of the ways I recharge is going to sleep. One of the ways I recharge is coming home, sitting on my couch and doing absolutely nothing, not turning on the TV, not listening to music, not getting on the phone, just taking the time to be still for a while because I've been moving in front of people all day. I'm a reader, so that's, I'm an extrovert reading, but I tend to think that that works very well for introverts to absorb. And then from time to time, with my introverted ways, I just like to be alone, but I don't get a lot of that. But I would say I'm an ENFJ.
Okay.
I'm extroverted. And if you drill down the numbers, apparently, according to the test, I'm 75% extroverted, so I'm a high extrovert.
That's pretty extroverted, yeah. Have you ever taken the Enneagram?
I did. I'm a 9.
So you're a peacemaker? Is that right?
I'm a peacemaker, yes.
Okay, so you're a number 9 on the Enneagram, a peacemaker. Tell me how that works with the city council.
It works well. Listen, people, apparently, so when you sign up for politics, it's a contact sport, and in Birmingham, it can be sometimes flagrant fouls. It could be sometimes a lot of penalties because of the contact. And people inherently want to fight. That's not my nature. I just told you how I grew up. I had to figure it out. I had to work with people. If there was one TV, we had to negotiate. We had to solve. I spent 8 years as a lawyer prior to being here, and I didn't mind trying a case, whether it was in front of a judge or a jury, but I always looked to settle my cases, and I settled the majority of my cases because I found some type of compromise with the defense attorney, but I also found a way for my victim to get the reparations they needed as well. I bring all of that. I bring how I grew up to the mayor's office. I bring my negotiating skills 8 years as a lawyer to the mayor's office, and I look to problem solve. And so I don't look to play politics. I look to solve problems. And inherently, when I meet somebody that only wants to fight or wants to play politics, my ability to listen more than I talk has been very helpful as a peacemaker. My ability to step in their shoes and show a massive amount of empathy has been very helpful. And the ability to want to say, I want to understand your issue. Now, if you want 5 things, and if I can't get you 5, if I can get you 2 or 3 of them, is that some form of a compromise or a olive branch? And these are all the things I bring as a peacemaker to the table.
Yeah. In this series, we've interviewed the mayors from around the state of Alabama, and in the group of the Big 5 mayors, as they're called, you're one of 2 Democrats and the only minority. Can you tell me a little bit about your experience being a Black man in Alabama politics?
So I'll start local. I believe that the people of Birmingham have put me in this position because they believe I can, as a leader, help solve problems on their behalf. I believe Democratic problems are Alabamian problems. And I'm elected as a nonpartisan mayor. I don't shy away from the fact that I'm a Democrat. And the way I grew up is you don't run away from people because they have different beliefs than you do. And so with my other mayors that are white, other mayors that are white men, my other mayors who cities are smaller in population who have different issues, some are the same, and for my other mayors that are Republicans, when we get together, we don't talk about what we disagree with, we talk about what we agree to. We all agree that finding better ways around public safety, public infrastructure, and economic development are priority. Mm-hmm. And so I speak to that to say this. I don't feel like I am a minority. I acknowledge I'm a minority. I know I'm a minority. But I wake up every day saying, how can I solve problems for the people that live here? Mm-hmm. And when I'm at the table with these other mayors, when I'm at the table with other Republicans, when I'm at the table with the governor, what can we agree on that works for the people of Birmingham and other Alabamians? Mm-hmm. That's the conversation.
I love that. Where do you need more courage in your life?
That's a great question. I would say on the job, I have it. I'm surrounded by a great team. They're not yes people. I give them a platform and an opportunity to push back and get their thoughts to me. We go back and forth, we flush it out, and we reach a conclusion that best works for the city of Birmingham. I think courage is attached to discipline, and so I wouldn't use the word courage. If I can take your format, I would use more discipline. I think I need to find more of a work-life balance. I think I work too much. I know I acknowledge I work too much. And if I go back to the word courage, I probably need to say, don't use work as an excuse. Find more time to spend with family. Find more time to balance my friendships that I have not spent a lot of time in. Mm-hmm. And find more courage to say no. Mm-hmm. In this position, you get into a habit of not wanting to disappoint people. But over these 17 months, I have learned to use those two letters. Mm-hmm. I've gotten more courage to use those two letters. And I've become more of a fan of using those two hand in hand.
Yeah. What routines or sort of scheduling norms are most important to you?
If I go outside of work first, I think a routine would be working out. I think a routine would be committing to being a sponge. So even if I'm not disciplined enough to stay on it, finding time to read and learn more. I think another thing that's not work-related is being more committed to find some just downtime that makes any sense, whether it's spending time with family, whether it's catching up with friends, committing to that. Now, work-wise, I think time, it has to be put in there that I get out of City Hall. My feet need to be on the ground, making sure I connect with and be in front of the people that put me in office. I have to stay connected to them. That's the biggest thing I'm committed to from a time standpoint.
Mm-hmm. I've heard you mention your love of books a few times. Any great books that you've read recently that you would suggest?
I'm reading a couple books right now. I always like to start with my favorite author because I tend to put books on repeat just like we put music and movies on repeat. And so Malcolm Gladwell was my favorite author. Blink, Tipping Point, Outlier, What the Dog Saw, all of his articles in The Atlantic. Like, I'm always reading his stuff, and I find myself overreading his stuff all the time, nerding out. But my favorite book is A Fire You Can't Put Out, which is about my favorite hero, Fred Shuttlesworth, who's probably the biggest player from this state who, in my mind, changed the civil rights in Birmingham and the state of Alabama. And was on the ground fighting in Birmingham 10 years before King came. When I'm reading about Frederick Douglass, I'm reading about Frederick Douglass' life right now. I can't think of the author's name because the book's over in the other room. But it is fascinating to read about Frederick Douglass. His oratorical skills, his writing skills, his ability to connect with everybody. Not just in the black race, but his olive branch way of saying uplifting the black community's problems across America. then sharing them in a way not just for the oppressed to understand, but for the oppressor at the time to understand and fight for us. It's been an amazing, amazing watching and reading his personal story.
That's interesting. What advice would you give to people in regards to politics in the sort of political environment that we're in right now?
We're in a tough time, man. I don't know if extremism works for America. I don't know if extremism works for capitalism. And I know extremism doesn't work for bringing people together. I tend to be an optimist. I tend to lean towards positivity. But I think where we've gotten to in America, not just in Alabama, but I tend to believe that most people that are not elected officials are actually right in the middle. They can see both sides. Even if they only lean towards one side, they can see the other side. And I would tell people that the pendulum swings, that in this rough patch, you have to stay diligent because it will swing back. Mm-hmm. Ideally, it will swing back in the middle. You don't want it to swing too far right, which I believe that's where it is. It doesn't need to swing too far left either, because those are, pun intended, outliers out here, right? I think we need to be somewhere right here as it relates to all branches of government, executive, judicial, and legislative, if we want this country to continue to be a beacon for the world.
Mm-hmm. Have you found any websites or media outlets that you feel like speak to what you describe as the majority of the people that are in the middle that you would recommend?
I think the Washington, I could be wrong. You got a friend here, so let them. I'm going to go back and forth on this. You tell me. I'm not a clickbait person, so there's certain news.com places where it's going to be slanted or it's going to be a headline to catch people.
Right.
I feel like the Washington Post is probably about as objective as you can get. Mm-hmm. I don't see nothing wrong with the New York Times, but I could be wrong. I don't read it a lot. I like the Atlantic. I'm local, so I do read AL.com, but that doesn't answer your question.
No, but that does. And I agree. You know, and I will say there's something, too, about the quality of writing that is attractive, right? So, like, even if a publication, even if you disagree with the majority of what somebody's publishing, if it's written at a certain level, it makes it worth reading. At least in my opinion.
I agree.
Yeah. I do want to be sensitive to your time. So we like to finish up with what we call rapid fire questions. So, you know, they're fast questions and you can give fast answers. All right. So what's the most trouble you got into as a child?
Elementary school was fourth, fifth grade. I was playing too rough with a young lady on the bus. It got out of hand. I got kicked off the bus for a while and had to walk to school. My mother was real mad.
What's the best compliment you've ever received?
Eighth grade, because it works in adulthood. I didn't realize how well it would be in adulthood. I went to Putnam Middle School in the yearbook. I wasn't one of the cool kids. The cool kids got best dressed, best looking, most athletic, most funniest. I didn't get any of that. My classmates gave me most courteous, best personality, and most friendliest. And I believe all three of those have played very well for me in 2019 as mayor of the city.
Absolutely. What's your favorite dessert?
Vanilla ice cream, peach cobbler. So both of them together.
I can appreciate that. Your favorite Birmingham tradition?
My favorite Birmingham tradition? That is a really good question. The first thing I think about is family, and it's probably family, if that makes any sense, around holidays. Mm-hmm. It's spending time with family. We don't go to a particular place. Well, at least we do. We go to my mom's house. It's my mom's house for big holidays.
Yeah, I love that. Your favorite city other than Birmingham?
I like D.C.
Me too. Your favorite clothing store?
Even if I don't shop there?
Sure.
Suit Supply. Suit Supply, of course.
Do you prefer mornings or nights?
Mornings.
Who do you text most often?
My senior team.
That's fair. Do you have any nicknames?
I've been giving Randy, Rand Lee, Wood, Wolf, Lee.
That's a solid slate. What purchase of $100 or less has had the most impact on you recently?
Some earphones. I was on a flight and I forgot my earphones on the first leg of the flight. It was awful. Touched down on my layover. I was able to go to some type of kiosk and buy some earphones. And I think they were like $75. And it's been the best purchase probably in 2019.
I love it. Well, Mayor, I really appreciate it. This has been fun, and I'm excited for other people to hear a little bit more about who you are and what you've got going on. How can people stay in touch with you?
They can always visit birminghamal.gov. They can follow us on our social media channels, which is Randall Woodfin on Twitter, and I believe on Facebook it's also Randall Woodfin. And on IG, I want to say it's Woodfin for BN.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much. I know you're busy. I'll let you get to it.
Hey, thanks a lot. Take care.
Cool. Thanks. See y'all.
You can keep up with Mayor Woodfin on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Next week, in our final episode of the season, we'll dive in with Mayor Sandy Stimson, the mayor of Mobile. Political People is created and hosted by me, William Haynes. The podcast is produced by myself and Joel Sappington, and this episode was recorded, mixed, and edited by Joel Sappington. Intro music by Rex Banner. Episode music by Rex Banner and Bamtone. Big thank you to Mayor Woodfin and his team for giving us their time. Special thanks to Wendell Kimbrough and friend of the show, Unity Fiber. If you have a connection to a politician that would like to be on our show, please email us at politicalpeoplepodcast@gmail.com. You can find more episodes wherever you listen to your podcast, and we'd love it if you would rate, review, and share this so that others can check out what we're doing. I'll see you next time, and until then, don't forget to love on your politicians. They're people just like you.